Nau mai, haere mai, and welcome to Full Disclosure, a Stuff and KL Productions podcast with me, Karen O'Leary. In this series, I talk with all sorts of amazing and famous Kiwis to find out how coming out was for them. This week on Full Disclosure, I talk to comedian Chris Parker.
Told everyone, took ages. I was like already on the cover of Express magazine as New Zealand's next gay young voice in comedy before I told my parents. And so that was a real motivator to be like, I need to tell them before they see the magazine I'm on the cover of. But in many ways, I was like, I'm gay and also a success.
Yeah. Now look, I'm absolutely pumped, chuffed, very, very pleased to be sitting opposite this person right now in the Full Disclosure studio. This person, obviously incredibly talented, multi-talented in fact. Not only is he funny, not only is he incredibly creative, he's also very, very tall. And obviously I'm sitting here with the one and only, the fantastic Chris Parker. Chris, thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me. You know what? Everyone always says that about me when they meet me. They always say, gosh, you're tall.
But is that because, why is that?
It's, I think, what we're going to solve over this podcast. This is a true crime, is it?
No, this is a podcast about height.
Oh, yeah, great. That's why I'm here.
Yeah.
I think I must give off a childlike energy, infant sort of like, he could be 7 years old.
Yeah,
so therefore, on this app, the app Instagram,
yeah,
where most people know me from. And then they meet me in real life and think, oh my good God,
what an adult.
Giant. And an adult, no less, with responsibilities and a family we don't know.
You've got a family that we don't know about?
Again, we will be answering these questions today.
Oh, look, we can't rush ahead, Chris. Like, we've only just started and now I'm already completely confused.
Okay? I want to get you off guard. You
that
know?
Doesn't
I
happen.
I want to pull the rug beneath.
You talk about my rug on this. Feet. Although this is the, yes, that
this
kind
would
of
be the, I mean, it's full disclosure.
And like I said, the one of the three notes I've got is that, and I've written it here without any good grammar, it just says, seen your penis.
Yeah, seen your rug.
You have actually. And for those of you listening that don't understand what we're talking about.
It was a night in 1972.
No, obviously it was when I got to the pleasure of working alongside Chris and his penis in the amazing film Nude Tuesday,
yeah,
where we all had to be completely starkers.
It was a remarkable experience and our first time working together. No, maybe.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, maybe.
But we knew of each other.
Truly. But I think we bonded on a level that was, you know, we had some heart-to-hearts over that shoot period, which was one of the most intensive experiences I've ever had. And I had just come off Celebrity Treasure Island, and yet I found the filming of Nude Tuesday to be sort of more immersive, more inescapable than CTI.
But I guess as well, even the fact that on Nude Tuesday, we were obviously as amazing actors, that's why we're on the film.
Yeah.
That's why
that's what we're known for, our amazing acting.
Yeah, but as acting. Obviously, we both were playing gay characters.
Yes.
Do you think we've been typecast?
That's a really good question. I think, I mean, I would only ever want to play gay characters now, I think. I mean, if a straight character, you know, I have played a straight character.
When?
Well, maybe not. And this could be up for debate and it could be truly humbling. But I was actually rewatching my cameo in Wellington Paranormal, where
yes,
I play opposite
Tom Sainsbury. I know
Sainsbury.
That show.
You know that show. And I play Officer
Shrewsbury. No, Sainsbury.
Sainsbury.
Yeah, yeah.
Alongside Tom Sainsbury. And I was watching that back and I was like, I think this character's straight.
Yeah, you were so manly and butch.
Yeah, well, because I was like kind of a cop, you know, and maybe, I don't know what happened, but we just decided to push in that direction. But I often play gay characters now when I do. I mean, I just play myself.
I think that's the trick to all acting.
It is.
That's what I've found out.
Just do you.
Yeah,
and then they'll say whether that character's gay or not.
Yeah. And generally speaking, yes, they bloody are. It's pretty obvious. Look at your haircut, Karen.
Listen to your voice, Chris.
Oh, this is terrible. Hey, look, now look, we could talk about all of the amazing projects we worked together on, and maybe
or
we will.
Or one of them.
No, two.
Well, we were never, I don't think we ever shared a day on set together.
But that was, that's.
But we were in the credits together.
Well, it's kind of like my show and you were in it.
Oh, you're true.
New Tuesday, we were both on that. And look, you know, now we're in a podcast together, so isn't that a beautiful thing? And also
your podcast, which I'm in.
Yep. And also, I did come to your 30th.
Yeah.
Had a great time at that.
Yeah, you did. I saw the bar tab.
Righty-ho, let's get back to the topic at hand,
yes,
which is obviously this podcast is all about talking to people about their experiences of being gay or bisexual in Aotearoa, New Zealand. And what it's been like for them, that journey, you know, from woe to go and keep going and whatever you want.
And then go to show.
Go to a show.
And show to woo.
Which part are you at?
I would say I'm at, I've definitely gone from go to woe.
Yeah.
And then I did woe to show. I did mini show.
Yes.
And I reckon now I'm at sort of show to woo.
Enough.
Pace yourself.
All right. Well, look, you pace yourself now as well because we're getting, again, ahead of schedule.
Yeah, sorry.
We need to start at the beginning. So when did you first know that you're gay?
It's such a good question and one that I feel like I'm constantly answering for people. Do you feel
Sorry, do you want a different question?
Yeah. Favourite chip.
How much do you love cricket?
What I find is people are very curious about it, aren't they? Like they always ask that. Because
you'd never asked a straight person. When did you know you were straight?
When was it confirmed for you? For me, I think now I've got an answer. I think I've got this answer that I give everyone. So I'll just give you the answer that I give it.
You give me the answer.
All the time, which is like I have always linked the sexuality journey to like there being something in the distance that I couldn't quite see because I didn't have my glasses on.
Yep.
There's this foggy kind of mysterious thing that I could sort of be like, huh, I think that is something.
Yeah.
But I'm sure everyone else is also seeing a foggy thing in the distance too. And you're sort of teenage years and no one's talking to each other and everyone's going through stuff.
Yeah.
And so you're like, you can kind of vibe with your friends that everyone can see something in the distance that's kind of foggy and they can't identify. And the older I got, the years went on, you know, there was the crash in the 90s. And no, but, you
know. No one else was seeing the fog, were they?
Well, I think people were, but the fog was different things for people. But as I got older, you know, whatever that fog was, that mysterious figure started to define itself more and more for me. And then I was like, that kind of looks like something. But I couldn't quite be sure. And then I got a little bit older and was like, okay, that does look a little bit like that thing.
Man.
But I'm not sure what that is. And then kind of got to a point where I was like, okay, I'm pretty sure what I am seeing there is this, but I couldn't possibly, and then there was a moment where I was like, aha, like I reckon it is that, but I'm not ready to sort of say it or identify it.
And then when are we talking now? How old are you?
I would say like, I would have been maybe like 20 when I was looking at it in its eyes and Dan Carter was winking at me back, you know, like I was like, okay, that is definitely a sexuality question. And like, and that's been confirmed from my Google search image, like history and from where my eye tends to wander and my taste in music and fashion. But now I'm not ready to sort of look at it and go like, that is me knowing I'm gay, and then eventually you just identify it and label it and then share it with the world, and then woe to go.
Yeah, and exactly. So you were 20.
But for a while, I guess it was like, I thought we were all, and I think we were all navigating certain questions about our identity. And there's it's lots of different people, be it like a mental health struggle or, you know, a gender identity question or whatever. Like we're all sort of working at who we are, even just like guys not necessarily fitting an ideal like understanding of masculinity. And that was a big one for me because I was at an all-boys school. And I think we weren't talking to each other, but we were all panicking alone in our room being like, who am I? And mine was, the gay thing, that old thing. And then, by the end of drama school, I was definitely finally out.
Yeah. So then go back to your school days. What was it like when you were at school? Because I can't imagine what it's like to be at an all-boys school.
Yeah.
Mostly because, not mostly for anything, but I'm not a boy. And also I went to a co-ed school.
Yeah. I couldn't imagine going to a co-ed school. I just couldn't possibly fathom what the environment would have been like. I do think because I, at that age, and that was the big thing I took away from the special was like, teens are always going to want to rebel or find or struggle through the sort of infrastructure that's around them. And then you can never not take that away from them because that's what being a teenager is about.
Yes, about torment.
Being like over everything and everything sucks and this doesn't understand me. And even though the world is becoming more inclusive and accepting, I still think it's important for teenagers to be misunderstood because it's like that's where identity is formed and it's so cool. So that's my big takeaway. I was like, you can't take away the pain or the struggle because they're just going to dig deeper and find more places to sort of butt up against something, yeah. and it's important to. But, yeah, so I think school was, well, it's so hard to sort of sum it all up because it was like a given. There was no way out of it. It was just the environment is what everyone else was doing. And, like, even the difference between, like, me and, like, kids now at school, like, it's they're just different worlds, like, in terms of the amount of representation, amount of, like, work that's been done in media and storytelling and everything around, like, representation. It just was, like, not there. So you didn't kind of question it. And so I was just like, this is the environment I'm going to be in. And I was still questioning that stuff about myself.
Yeah.
But the sort of prejudices or, you know, the resistance that people had to who I was clearly becoming in terms of beyond sexuality, just about who I am as a man.
Yes.
And that not fitting the picture of how they see men being, that's the other guys in the school, then, you know, like, there were other kids who were also going through that resistance. And so, like, we were all going through it together.
Yeah, but I guess as well, like you said today, I think, you know, there is that increased representation, there is that awareness, there is that a much deeper understanding for lots of people, not for everyone, obviously. But do you think that that's going to help people find themselves earlier?
I hope so. Yeah, I think so. And I think it is happening. But again, I think teenagers will still feel misunderstood.
Yeah, like they need that.
They need it. It's beautiful. It's so good, you know. Like, you still are going to fall in love with the wrong person or, you know, your parents are still going to be assholes or whatever. And it's like, it's so good. It's so good to lean into it. That's what being a teenager is about.
Absolutely. Embrace it.
Yeah.
We don't want happy teenagers.
Have a horrible haircut. Like, you've got to have at least two that you are like, thought was everything, and then look back and you're like, what was I thinking?
Gosh.
It's so important to do that.
Yeah, like my long blonde ponytail that I had at high school for most of the time. And a massive big fringe.
Like up or down?
Oh, no, down. Sensible down, but yeah.
I had long sort of shoulder length blonde hair.
Did you? At your all boys school?
Yeah. And I really was trying to go for like, I was watching a lot of Home Away at the time, kind of a surfer look.
Lots of homo ways. I was like,
homo waves.
Homo and gay.
Homo and way.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of surfers. I was into them because I was obviously sexually attracted to them, but I was thinking they were more like male role models. You know, just the weird narratives we give ourselves at that age. But I love this sort of carefree rocker surfer hair. And I was like, I could do that. And like consistently rocked like a soft blowout.
Beautiful.
You know, just like soft, luscious, thick curls. I remember playing John Proctor in my high school production of The Crucible, and that's when my hair was at its longest because it was period.
Yeah.
And I walked out on stage and I heard a girl in the front row go, oh, that's exactly how I want my hair for my formal.
Here's a question. This is completely random, nothing to do with really the podcast at all, but I just always wanted to know. Why are sometimes gay men more into fashion than straight men?
I feel like that's right on topic.
And it is actually, isn't it? But yeah, do you know the answer?
You know, I just don't know. Like, and that's this whole confusing thing I've found about being not only a gay man, but like a gay man in media and like sort of commented on and like kind of considered like a stereotypical gay.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what even is that? Like, because I don't really link. And that's the thing I find, like, my journey with my sexuality is almost quite separate to my journey as, like, a man.
Yeah.
Because people are so fine with, like, you know, love who you want to love and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, but it's me kind of running around my limp wrists and screaming and being exaggerated and more feminine that I find most men have a problem with. And so, but I don't link that. Sure, there are a lot of gay men who are flamboyant, but I sort of think of them as separate things. One's my personality and one's my sexuality.
Yeah, well, this is, we were just talking about someone else that said, you know, obviously your sexuality is not actually a personality trait.
No, but it is weird because I would consider us both to be quite sort of stereotypical in terms of who we represent.
What are you trying to say?
I
know, but that's a thing. But then it's, making it worse?
I don't know. I think we are just being who we want to be, but I feel like we're both having a revelation in terms of our own identities and being kind of cliches.
Yes.
But it feeling true to us. And so I don't know if we're being led or if there's only just so many types of people in this world. But my draw to
Barbie or Julia Roberts or Barbara Streisand or fashion or wanting to drink a martini is feels very like natural to me. It doesn't feel like I'm putting it on.
Yeah.
It's a primal urge.
Similarly, Julia Roberts in Pretty Woman, when she did that I'd really fancy the pants off her.
Yeah.
Drinking beer and watching the cricket.
Oh, it's interesting. Just, yeah. I was sort of thinking like, what a, like, yes. Like, I don't know. Sort of, I think her just sort of going to that shop. And
No, I just remember that bit where, when they were sitting watching the movies and she was laughing and you knew what they were going to do.
Yeah.
It was not Richard Gere that I was looking at, that's for sure.
I wasn't looking at Richard Gere either in that film, but I wasn't looking at Julia Roberts in the same way that you were.
Yeah, I think
and that's gay culture.
Yeah, there you go, 101.
Yeah, exactly.
I think you're conflating a whole bunch of issues.
Don't want to be held to account rising child abuse numbers.
You can manipulate crime statistics.
I promised I wouldn't have a tag to you about gotcha journalism.
Hang into the National Party's tagline there.
It would be a resignation offence if I didn't deliver tax reduction.
I'm not worried about it at all.
Nothing iffy in there. That sits with you perfectly fine.
That's what we're focused on.
Whatever happens in politics, the weird, the wonderful, the important, the thought-provoking, we got you. Listen to Tova wherever you get your podcasts.
Right, Chris, let's go back to, again, we go forward and we go sideways. When you first did come out officially, publicly.
Yeah.
When was that? How did it go? Who was it to?
1920. It was before the war.
Yeah. It was a hard time to come out.
It was after drama school. So I went through all of high school.
Yeah. Yep.
And then I went through all of Toi Whakaari in the closet as well. I actually made a show in my third year. We make like a solo work and it was called No More Dancing in the Good Room. And it was, you know, a full use of my drama school expression. It was like very performance art. Well, so I thought I was, it was like me. It was exploring when I gave up dance and ballet as a boy and it used a lot of home footage. And there was a lot of time in me like watching old home videos. And I was definitely thinking about like, you know, the whole, but within the third year of drama school, it was just like, when is he going to come out? And everyone was sort of talking about it colloquially and casually. Yeah. And it would be kind of, it wasn't a joke, but it was just like, you know, it was so normalized that my struggle in this weird way that made it even harder for me to want to come out, I guess, because maybe there was the shame of like, everyone could see this thing about
everyone
me that I
knows.
Just couldn't see myself, which is why like, when people tell your story of like, and then I came out and then my parents were like, we know, like I find that response of we know, like, so unhelpful in a weird way because
that's what my mum and dad said to me.
How did you feel when they said that?
I was like, nah. Yeah, I was like, at least have some response.
Well, that's what I find.
But then I didn't want them to have like a, oh my God, response either. So it's,
no, but I think coming out is really awesome. Like, I think, not in the sense of like, you should be like, versus staying in, but like, just the process of coming out is a really special thing that I think queer people get to do. And I feel like when people are like, we should be living in a world where we don't have to come out. Mm. I'm like, well, I do think we should still be living in a world where we're having robust conversations around our identities and, you know, our sexual curiosities with each other. Yeah. You know, I think that's a great world to be living in. So I do feel like those coming out conversations are really healthy because I love what comes out of them. And you have these like really gorgeous, honest, frank conversations with one another. But my kind of coming out is that sort of classic thing of dating a woman, and I sort of explored a couple of heterosexual pairings to see if that was a thing for me. And that's why I go back to that sort of fuzzy figure thing of like slowly working it out. Because it wasn't like I was like, I need a decoy. There was no part of me that was like maliciously dating a woman to like sort of keep people off the chase. I was actively trying to work out where I lay in terms of my sexuality.
Trying to help that thing become more clear.
Yeah, and it's not like I was using her to be like, okay, it's definitely men. It was like, I just was like, there was an attraction there. And so it was just like, that's why it's like very spectrum-y, isn't it? Like it's not like black and white. And so we broke up and then she asked me, there's this rumor, people talk about it, that potentially you might be interested in men. And I remember, like, it's like a train going past.
Mm, yeah.
And I was like, get on the train, get on the train. I'm so used to being like, no, that's nonsense, and getting on that train. And I just remember, like, the metaphorical train just, like, passing. And I had left it too long to, like, jump on. The train had left the station, that, like, the silence had spoken the truth.
Yeah.
And that was it, you know, the truth was out. And then sobbed. And shock of it, I guess, and the admission of it for myself, not to even to her, but just to be like, I had finally said it to myself. Yeah. And then got dropped off at Hayley Sproul's house. She opened the door, immediately knew what had happened without even uttering a word. And then we stayed up till 4 a.m. and talked on her deck in Wellington. And then her fiance, Aaron, came home, and he sort of came home at like 3 a.m. He saw us talking out on the deck. And apparently when Hayley went to bed that night, Aaron said, so has Chris come out? And so he could already tell what was going on.
Yeah. So basically everyone kind of did give you that we know response a little bit.
Yeah. And that's, yeah, so then it came through the process of like telling like my closest friend. You go on this big like publicity tour.
Yeah.
Big PR campaign. You got to tell everyone. And it took me ages to tell my parents.
Why is that?
Because it's an awkward conversation that we were not prepped for, in the sense that, not that they were not unconditionally supportive and loved me no matter what, but because we talked about other stuff. And we were never like, hey, and so back onto the old identity stuff.
Yeah.
We still chug along with the whole straight things that we want to roll? Or, you know, it's like, so, you know, it involved me having to sit down and be like,
I've got something to say.
Yeah, exactly. And that's like, it's never not awkward. And everyone's like, it's not, it shouldn't be a big deal, but it is a big deal. Yeah. It's a big deal. So, yes, told everyone, took ages. I was like, already on the cover of Express magazine as New Zealand's next gay young voice in comedy before I told my parents. And so that was a real motivator to be like, I need to tell them before they see the magazine I'm on the cover of.
Because they're frequently reading Express magazine?
No, I mean, it's, like, it was like it goes, circulating on Facebook and stuff.
Oh, right.
But in many ways, I was like, I'm gay and also a success.
Yeah, look at this. So you could have just sent them that in the post.
I could have. I feel like would have really robbed us from the sort of tender, heartwarming moment where we could have like connected and chatted.
And to really talk about those things that really matter to you.
And to sort of like, it's so exposing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you're straight being sort of get robbed of that a little bit. Don't you think?
But they get lots of other benefits. So I think they're going to be okay.
I'm just like, oh, we wish we could give them something.
Well, I was just talking to Maddie McLean, and I decided that we're going to start a thing where we have Be Friends with the Gay Day.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So we're just going to send lots of gays out in the
internet. Is that fair for the gays?
No, not entirely, but life is not fair, outreach. Chris.
They're sort of doing the good work. You know, we have to volunteer a day where we sort of help some straights out.
Yeah, you know, we're those kind of people, aren't we?
We are.
We're always
charitable.
Trying to help things out. Speaking of being
I would say I've got like way more straight friends than I ever thought I was. Because I used to have a joke that I was like, I've got no straight friends. And now I look at it, I'm like, I think most of my friends are straight. I don't really have many like.
I think I've got hardly any lesbian friends.
I actually feel like I've got heaps of lesbian friends.
Have you?
So this thing happens in your 30s, I find, where all your female friends are like, guess what? I'm bi or lesbian or whatever. You're like, wow, my God. They're so like, you all are great, amazing. Like, it's suddenly like.
Women just see the light, you know?
I don't know what happens in your 30s, but it all sort of changes. You think you know it all, and then suddenly, boop, it's a whole new energy.
Yeah. But then why does that not happen to straight men?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that would be a plot twist. I love it.
I don't think it's going to happen. You can finish your mouth up if you like. Well, that was good and low.
What, my voice?
Yeah.
Yes, right. I've got an incredibly low voice. I think I have a really gay voice. Would you say my voice sounds gay? Close your eyes. Hi, Karen.
Sorry.
On the Kinsey scale, where's that sitting?
But again, it's like that thing of what is a gay voice? It's like.
I know,
but it's true. People
in the comment section on any, you know, social media can tell you probably what a gay voice is.
Yeah, but I can tell lesbians from the phone.
Can you?
Yes. Like,
I can tell but from the phone?
Yeah.
The like home phone?
Yeah, on the landline. No. No, but if I'm talking to someone.
Yes.
But only if they're my type of, like, a stereotypical lesbian. Okay. I feel like they've got a certain kind of voice.
A sort of attack on the phone. What is it?
Attack? What do you mean?
Like, Well, how do you mean? What do you mean?
I mean, like a lesbian voice is just, I guess, for lack of a better way to describe it, slightly more masculine sounding and or
I'll close
delivery.
My eyes and then I'll go, hello, Karen speaking, because okay. I'm you in the situation.
Yeah, right, okay.
And then you be the lesbian on the other end of the phone.
Yeah, yeah.
Bring. Hello, Karen speaking.
Yeah, hi, it's just me, Susie, just ringing about your car. The warrant's done, so if you want to come pick it up anytime.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have picked lesbian off that.
What would you have picked?
I don't know.
Mechanic. Yeah. That's what I was going for. This is my acting.
But also Karen, you know, just you being you.
Yeah. Now look, back to you being charitable.
Mm.
Obviously you were on that big massive show where you were the ultimate brilliant champion. Celebrity Treasure Island.
Yes. You know it.
I know it. I didn't win it. But for you, knowing that you'd raised all of that money for Rainbow Youth.
Yeah.
How big of an impact do you think that had?
For them or for me?
Both.
Okay. For them, huge. We're just coming out of COVID. And so a lot of the support, that financial support that those smaller organizations were getting had been sort of reshuffled in order to focus on this massive health crisis that we were facing.
Yeah.
And so it was harder for these smaller charitable organizations to get a bit of money to keep going. And what I liked about Rainbow Youth was that, all these rainbow organizations are amazing and all the work they do, and they're all stretched. I could have picked any of them. Rainbow Youth I'd worked with in the past, and I like that they work on this, like, you know, different levels. Like they sort of work in terms of advocacy.
Yeah.
And then they also just have like these, like, on the ground drop-in centers where young trans kids can like play around with makeup or clothes to sort of navigate how they want to be in the world. And there's like counseling. And so I was like, it's like, you know, seems like a great place to sort of, for that money to go, because it feels like it could spread quite wide. So lots of people were sort of, who hadn't known about Rainbow Youth, were introduced to Rainbow Youth. And then they were also compelled to want to donate. And so they'd seen like heaps of donations as well, which is amazing. And then for me personally, like, I think the show is so weird, and that show was such a, you know, it was a really intense experience. It's a long time away without seeing the people you love and not having a phone and just not having those comforts. You feel really out of it.
You won the phone call, though, eh?
I did win the phone call.
I remember that, though. Yeah. That made me cry.
It was a beautiful moment.
It was, I know.
It was really confronting in terms of like just being in a competitive environment and at this thing around like challenges and games, which I find queer people will find immediately like triggering in a weird way, because it just brings it back to school or athletics day or whatever, and it's suddenly it's all like out there again.
Do you think that's especially so for gay men as opposed to lesbian women?
I don't know. I don't want to make that call.
I was going to make it.
Okay, you can. I just think queer people find athletics day uncomfortable. Swimming sports uncomfortable across the board. Or did you thrive?
No, I can't swim. And also I'm a really slow runner. So
here we go.
I love team sports though.
Right.
So I went into, when I went into Treasure Island, I was like, this is going to be great. I used to be so good at sports. But I forgot that I'm 45 or whatever it was. I've never been an Olympian or an All Black, and I'm not a 6-foot-tall man, so I'm pretty much screwed in all of the challenges.
But it brings, and don't you think it brings out those old, weird, like, even though they're not really related, it just brings it all out again. I don't know, like, you haven't fully unpacked it, or it's just sort of sitting there, or it just hits it. And so I found myself sort of navigating this probably sleep-deprived and hunger-fueled identity crisis while being filmed. And so, like, I was so consumed by it. And then by the end, I had made my mind up that I wasn't going to win and that I was going to be fine with that.
Did you say you had made your mind up?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I just wanted to make, like, some money for Rainbow Youth and make some funny TV. Those are my goals coming out of it. And then, so I was finding myself on finals days, totally consumed by it all. And the morning I woke up was just sort of, like, thinking to myself, like, how do you want to be through this? How are you going to navigate this, Chris? And I thought, okay, like, one, make great TV. It's always been the goal.
Yes.
And then two, try and be like a role model for your charity. So you might not be able to bring the money back, but you might be able to spread the message back. And also if there's like young queer kids watching or kids struggling with who they are or whatever, then they could watch that and they could take something away from that. And that's worth enough. And
so you talked to the ball.
So I talked to the ball. Yeah. I cheered myself on.
You
I never
said
gave
you were
going to
give up. I just, exactly. Honestly.
And sort of had written on my hand, do this for Rainbow Youth. And so yeah. I just knew that it was, meant that it wasn't going to be a reflection on my performance, but like that I could do this for something bigger than me. Yes. And the way that I carried yeah. myself would have meant that I wasn't like sulking or
fuck this.
Having a hissy fit or just like losing and then sort of being embarrassing.
Yeah. Okay, Chris, think of yourself as a young person. Now, I actually just before.
I sort of see myself as a young
person. Yeah,
that's
right. You are a 7-year-old. But also, I was thinking about you when you were young and dancing.
Creepy.
Because going back to the first thing I said to you about your penis, I remember on New Tuesday watching you dance.
Oh, and fully dressed.
Yeah, with your clothes on. Yeah. And just thinking like, wow, you were like an actual official ballet/contemporary dancer professional.
I love to dance.
I'm not surprised because you're so good at it.
Thank you. I've always used my body to express myself. And yeah, I did ballet as a boy and dropped out because of, drum roll, identity issues, not sort of, all that boring stuff, robbing myself of. I don't know why we do that. But I was just like, oh, no, the boys are doing ballet. They're going to find out who I am and that's bad or something. I don't know what sort of.
That's why I dropped out of rep cricket because I was worried there was too many lesbians.
We needed to swap.
I know. This is like when we had that meeting for New Tuesday. And I was like, I should have been in the men's meeting for that.
It was so beautiful. A meeting. Yeah. I consider that more a conversation. But they were meetings.
Yeah, they were meetings, yeah.
But you and I guess
yes,
had somewhat of a meeting.
Yeah.
I know we were talking about our like weird sort of draw to like you wanting to be with the men and me wanting to be with the women. And that like for me that was like school. Like I always liked hanging out with the girls.
And because I could hear what the women were saying about, their concerns around nudity. And I certainly didn't. I had plenty of my own.
Yeah.
But I didn't feel like I fitted into that group of straight women. But anyway. We've gone again. I haven't answered. The one question was, your young, lovely, dancing self, Chris Parker.
Yeah.
Would you give yourself any advice that you think would be helpful?
Oh, I just don't think I could. I don't know. I'm so grateful for the journey I had, even though it was difficult. I think... And what is that? I guess all obstacles, all resistance, maybe, I don't know, but like is a point of growth and will help define who you are. I think there's some resistance that's unnecessary and like hard, like actually difficult and probably you could do better without. But like I think in terms of what I went through, like it sort of helped me form who I am. So I guess... Like, what is it? I don't know. Why? I feel like I need more advice to who I am now, but
because I feel give like you some advice if you want now.
Yeah, go on.
You need to start dressing better. And
I guess my advice for my younger self would be like, I don't know, like you're loved.
Yeah,
that's all you.
But
sort
didn't?
Of,
but your younger self knew that, didn't they?
I guess so. But what is the? I don't know what the fear was or what I was scared of, I guess, that I was not going to be. So to be reminded that I was would be good advice. But even if you get given that advice, you probably don't take it on board.
No.
So maybe listen, take the advice.
Okay, take advice that's given to you, unless it's rubbish. Yeah. Thinking about, though, just before we finish, let's go back to, that time when you did come out.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think once you'd done it, so, after your third year of drama school, did your relationship with yourself change as a result?
Yeah. But I think my relationship to myself is changing every day.
Mm.
And so naturally, when I came out, I found that liberation and, went through my baby gay era of I was all that.
Yeah.
And I was running around screaming gay rights. Yeah. The rainbow flags were up and now I find myself jaded and withered and... I think you're just constantly coming out, aren't you? And you're constantly looking back at your former self and cringing or loving it and then moving on and then, coming out of the next stage in your life. And so I think, my relationship to myself is always, but I'm never
evolving,
but I'm never ashamed. I am not ashamed of who I have been in the past.
And I don't think you should be ashamed of who you are now, Chris.
You're like, apart from this, explain this photo.
No, I don't have any photos. Chris, Honestly, it's been an absolute pleasure. What a treat. You're very funny. You're very lovely to talk to. I just really enjoy all your ideas. You're a very smart person.
Do you think?
Yeah. Yes.
Well, thank you.
Isn't that not true? What did you get for school C?
Oh, barely got through because I knew I got into drama school and so I forgot to turn up to my music exam.
What were you going to play at music?
I was just studying it.
Oh, so you weren't playing?
But I played the clarinet.
Oh, yeah, I can see that.
I give off that vibe. Did you play an instrument?
I just play the guitar.
Yeah, I can see that too.
Lesbian. All right. Well, on that note, on that musical note, I'm going to get my...
fingers, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Chris, thank you so much. I hope you have just such a lovely rest of your day.
Well, thank you. And to those listening,
yes,
we wish you a very merry
Christmas.
Christmas.
This was Full Disclosure, a Stuff and Kale Productions podcast. Thanks so much for listening. There's a new episode released every Tuesday. You can find them at stuff.co.nz/full disclosure or wherever you get your podcasts. If you follow us on Apple or Spotify or any of the podcast apps, you'll get the latest episode delivered automatically without lifting a finger. Thanks to creator and producer Kate Langdon, Stuff producer Jen Black, and executive producer Chris Reed, and audio editor John Ropiha, with original music by Eilish Wilson. Mā te wā, Aotearoa.
Hey, Chris.
Yes.
Do you want another very broad question? I've got a very broad question today.
Go on, then.
What do you know about sports?
Up the Wazz! Go the Black Caps. And don't forget Premier League football.
Oh, you do love a bit of Premier League footage,
do.
Don't you? What team is it that you support again?
Oh, the current champions, Manchester City.
I think they're pronounced Arsenal. It's pronounced Arsenal.
But you know what's good about football?
Yeah, what?
They don't regulate soccer height.
I'm sorry? There's a sport that regulates sock height?
Indeed there is, and it's cycling.
That's very strange. Why on earth do they regulate it?
Well, I know, but if you want to find out, you'll have to listen to the Big Stuff Quiz, wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, that's a cliffhanger indeed. The Big Stuff Quiz is brought to you by Melbourne Every Bit Different.
If you don't have time to read the in-depth stories, or you just prefer to listen instead, The Long Read from Stuff is the podcast for you. Each week we showcase one of our excellent pieces of journalism, telling important or entertaining stories from the world of crime, sport, history, culture and more. You also get to hear from the journalists themselves about how they uncovered the story and how it came to life. So for your weekly dose of long-form journalism, beautifully read, subscribe to The Long Read from Stuff wherever you get your podcasts.